This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Cravings podcast with Pete Dillon, online at joy.org.au/cravings and live Saturdays from 1 p.m. on Joy 94.9 in Melbourne. Exploring all that's finest in food and beverage across Melbourne and Victoria. Sponsored by La Spaghettata. Over 35 years of food, family and fun at 238 Lygon Street, Carlton. Wine and dine with La Spaghettata for an authentic Italian experience. Pasta, wine, seafood, steak and so much more. Dine in and enjoy the authentic sights and sounds of Lygon Street. Or order takeaway now via Deliveroo, Uber Eats or Foodora. Eat, drink, love with La Spaghettata. Call 9663-6102. Visit laspaghettata.com.au or find them on Facebook.
Welcome to today's edition of Cravings. My name is Tad Lombardo, and Pete Dillon has scored the day off. Lucky Pete and Noosa. And in the studio today with me is Stuart McKenzie, who has just put out a cookbook and is obviously a well-known person in Melbourne's cafe scene. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tad. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming in. I've got a copy of this amazing cookbook in front of me, and this is your first book. It's called All Day Cafe, and it's distributed or put out by Murdoch Books, is that right?
That's right, Alan and Unwin.
Yep. And I've had a good look at it, and I absolutely love it.
Thanks,
love what you've
Dad.
Done with it. It's a really well put together cookbook with incredible recipes. The photography is brilliant. The styling is incredible. I love how you've got the four sections, broken down into seasons, which, you know, we all, you know, are told that we should be eating seasonal and that sort of thing, you know, for the environment, it's good for us and that kind of stuff, and getting the fresh food. And this is a great way that people can actually do that. You can go to that section, and, you know, we're in autumn now, so you can go to those recipes. And, you know, I know one that I'm going to do is the pappardelle with the duck ragu. That's one of my favorite ones.
I have chosen.
I'll be doing that this weekend.
Oh, thanks. And that was one of the ideas, the main ideas behind the book, the seasonality of the ingredients. For a variety of reasons, it's probably, there's a few ideas behind it. There's the availability of produce, which was a big thing with the book. We wanted to make sure that the recipes were affordable for most people and accessible.
Yep.
And so things that are in season at markets tend to be more affordable.
Yeah,
buy trays of tomatoes and things when in season.
Yeah.
So that was the idea as well, apart from the fact that it's allegedly better for you to eat things when they're in season rather than, as you can imagine, hot houses and...
Absolutely, and they taste better too.
I think so too.
Definitely. Yep. And so the concept is cafe-style food to make at home.
Yep.
And the recipes are straightforward and well-instructed. And the other thing I really liked what you did is the cook's tips about certain things and each section as well, the different tips you had about, you know, whether it's styling or, you know, the bone handled knives and those sorts of things that people, when they are entertaining at home, they can incorporate that, and it just creates a bit better experience for them and the people that they're entertaining.
Yeah, it personalizes a bit to me as well. I mean, I'm very, very lucky. I'm not a qualified chef. I've worked in kitchens when I was younger for quite a few years, actually. And most of my adult life, I've been managing restaurants for other people, and I've owned a couple of cafes myself. Yeah. But I worked very closely with my head chef, Matthew Palmer. So lots of those chef's tips are sort of combinations of things that I'd do or he'd do or ideas that we might have had together. But the styling thing, I think part of, you know, when we're talking before air about the cafe scene in Melbourne, fit outs and the ambience and stuff is quite an important part of a lot of spaces. So those little tips are just kind of things that you can do, once again, that don't cost a lot of money, just to create a little bit of atmosphere and stuff. If you've got friends coming over, or like on a beautiful day like today, long weekend, if you wanted to have people over for lunch or brunch.
Yeah. Which none of us probably get to do often, some of us at least. but it's providing practical tips and using things that are readily available, you know, whether it's flowers or produce, you know, to decorate with. And I think that's something that I quite enjoy doing, because it just makes, again, that experience for the people that you're entertaining a little bit better, and it just adds to the creativity of what you're doing.
And I think the rules are sort of a bit different these days. Not that there's ever any, you know, hard and fast rules, but table settings and creating a mood used to seemingly be quite formal. But now, you know, people use jam jars and old sheets for tablecloths and stuff, and eclectic plates, and some of Nan's old collection, and some from the chef's shop, you know, like... Everyone loves playing around with that sort of stuff, I think.
Yeah, and there's old conventions of the knife and the spoon and the fork must be here. The water glass must be there.
Gone.
You know, gone. And I think that's... I mean, you know, there's a level of formality that exudes, which in some applications is quite nice. But on an everyday basis, I think it's more real to not be doing that and to enjoy those things.
And automatically your guests are relaxed.
Yeah, absolutely. And feel more at home. And I guess that's kind of what you wanted to kind of... create with the book and doing all that with the book. How long has it taken for you from start to finish to read? Because there's a lot of recipes in there.
There's a lot, isn't there? Well, I was very fortunate. I was asked if I wanted to do the book. The lady from a lovely lady called Corinne came in from Murdoch Press to the cafe when I wasn't there one day and sent me a beautiful letter. When I undertook the writing of the book, I didn't realize how much work went into it. There's an incredible amount of work. The recipes that are in there, I think there's about 120, but we had to submit about 160.
Right.
So there's actually more work behind the scenes than in there, and there's a lot, an incredible amount of to-ing and fro-ing. But it took about 2 years from when I was first asked until today, let's say. Probably about 2 years. I'd say the actual writing of it took about 6 months, and then another 6 months in the to-ing and fro-ing and testing and editing and all that sort of stuff.
So is that 6 months while you're working things at the cafes and doing the other day-to-day responsibilities that you have?
Yes, but as I said, I worked with my head chef as well, and so we kind of worked on it together, and he was incredibly helpful during that period because, you know, some of the recipes I had invented from years ago.
Yeah.
Some of the things were the things that we have on the menu now or things that we might have had in specials. So it was just working together with someone to sort of clarify was really an important part of it too.
And I think that's one of the great things about having a cafe, that you can, years later, do a book.
Yeah.
You know, you've done the hard work already with the recipes and the menus that change all the time. And at least you can put it in one place where people can sort of have a history of that, which I think is quite good.
Totally. And it's incredibly rewarding. It's a really rewarding experience to do something like that. Yeah,
definitely. And so the book's is released in March, right? This month?
It's been released,
So it's available. People can get it. Where can people buy the book from?
There's quite a few different places. Yeah. Like readings, bookshops. I always try to get people to, I shouldn't say this, but I like people to buy smaller businesses, you know, like strip shops and things like that. So, you know, your local bookshop should have it.
Yep.
It is also in the David Jones catalogue.
Okay,
and
good.
It's available at Chill Out this weekend at Mantenoir in the main street in Vincent Street.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
And in the process of, I don't know, my background, as I was saying before, is engineering, so I'm very interested in processes of what people do to get in the zone to write the book, because you've got all the stuff happening around you all the time, mm-hmm. and you need to sort of hone that focus down so that you can actually do what you have to do, need to do. Were there any times where you had like writer's block?
Not really. Not writer's block so much, but there were things that we took a long time to get past. Right. So what happens is like me and my chef would, I mean, sometimes I'd be doing the book by myself.
Yeah.
Sometimes Matthew that I spoke of would be doing things and sort of showing me.
Yeah.
But there were times when we sat like you and I are now across from a table with two laptops open, yeah. typing. And I'm what's called a Luddite, apparently. It doesn't know much about using computers. So everything is very laborious. For right. me with a keypad, but there was more after that. We were kind of doing that fine, and then what happens is it goes to a proofreader, of course, yep. That's employed by Murdoch, and she was amazing.
Yeah,
but some of the questions just kept going back and forward, and we thought we'd clarified, but we hadn't, and
yep.
you know, there was some just bit of a block with a few different things and weights and measures.
Right, and I guess too, you know, a lot of times in the kitchen. Terminology or concepts you would understand and your head chef would understand as well,
yes.
but conveying that so that somebody at home could do it is another thing altogether, where you need to sort of reword it differently. And
if you're making something every day, you're just grabbing a pinch of that, and it's like, how much? Oh, I don't know, it's just a pinch, you know, yeah. but
it's enough.
Yeah, but they need to know what the weight is, you know, so
of course, yeah.
So we've got scales out,
right.
You know, little test tubes. Not test tubes.
But that would have taken a long time as well if you had to scale out every recipe like that.
It did.
Yeah. And was there a point too where each recipe was then tested by someone to make sure that?
Yes. So the recipes, most of them had been tested in our kitchen.
Yeah.
But then there's also a team that the publishers have that pull recipes out and they test them as well. So they'll send you a recipe and say, like, I made this. I suggest it has a bit more of this in, and then we'll remake it and go, right. okay, yes. Or you mustn't have had it on the right temperature and stuff. So they do get tested quite thoroughly.
Right. Okay. And then feedback back and forth. And
yeah.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
It is.
But again, it makes sense then that it took 2 years to get this. You know,
I've got a great job,
finish.
Don't you think?
I do.
I just cook things for the publisher. That's so right, yeah. They pay for all your groceries yeah. and you just sit at home and make all these things.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I think that'd be a great job.
Absolutely. And doing a book, is that something that you said they approached you about? Is it mm-hmm. something that you ever thought about doing? Or was it just something that was a remote possibility of
I hadn't happening? Really. I mean, yeah. I had a cafe a few years ago in Middle Park called
Metro.
Mart.
Oh, Mark yeah. 130. Right?
Yeah, Mark 130. That's right. That's right. And once again, there was a lady that came in, and I had business partners then, south of Johnston. It's just me and my partner.
Yeah.
Back then, I had business partners, and we were all asked if we wanted to do a cookbook, and we sort of played around with the idea, but it didn't sort of transpire, mainly because of us, rather than, you know, them not the publishers not think it was a good idea. And so I actually had kind of put that idea to bed. I don't tend to I don't tend to chase things. Like I didn't sort of ring around and want to find out how I can get this done.
Yeah.
I was really surprised, to be honest with you, Tad, that someone wrote me such a beautiful letter and that the opportunity had arisen again. And I actually thought to myself, you've got to do it because this means you're meant to do it. So
that's great. Well, we're going to hear more about your story in the next segment.
Joy 94.9 is on air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But sometimes you can't always be with us when you want to. Here's the solution. Here's the solution. Listen to your favorite Joy 94.9 show anytime with our Joy podcast service. Our team of over 30 volunteers pick out the best bits from around 60 programs that Joy airs each week, made available to you for free download. To find a podcast of your favourite Joy show, search for us in the featured providers section within the iTunes store, or find them on the Joy website, joy.org.au. Joy Podcasts. Any show, anytime, joy.org.au.
Welcome back to Cravings. I've got Stuart McKenzie in the studio with me. We're talking about his new book, All Day Cafe. If you've got any questions you might want to ask Stuart today while we're speaking with him on air, you can email us at onair@joy.org.au or send us an SMS at 0427-569-949. Stuart, we were talking before about the obviously your beautiful cookbook that I've had the opportunity and the privilege to have a look at. And it's like I said, it's an incredible piece of work, and the photography and everything that's in it is quite beautiful. And a lot of the photos, I'm assuming, are at your cafe in Collingwood, is that right?
Yeah, so some of them were taken. I mean, I must say that the stylist and Deb and the photographer Armel are pretty amazing people to work with. And I'd never sort of worked with anybody professionally on that level before, so it was fascinating to watch. And they are really big parts of the end product. But it's shot partly in the studio, partly at South of Johnson, partly at home.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's a few shots from home.
And did you have a lot of input in the styling side of it, though? I mean, obviously, okay, that's good, because I mean, obviously you've got a flair for that.
Well, that was I wanted to make sure that it represented my style and the feel that I wanted for the book.
Yeah.
Of course, there's other influences in there. So what happens, I don't know if you're aware of like how stylists work, but when we're in the studio, like Deb, the stylist, brought in all her stuff, and it's probably like a truckload of things. Like, so she sets up trestle tables like a village fete, about six of them, I think, and just lays out all the rows of knives, all rows of forks, all rows of plates.
Like a tag sale or something.
It's unbelievable. Like, and I was just like, there's so much stuff here. And then they go through with, you know, bags of linen and stuff, and then they put it all together. And I did the same. I bought some stuff from home as well and stuff from the cafe. So we sort of got a good blend of, you know, objects and things to play with.
Yeah, and obviously they brought things that worked within your style of the way you thought it, you know, wanted it to be. And
a lot of the quirky little things that you'll see through there, things that I've found at op shops over the years, or secondhand stalls, or
you refurbish them on the
beach.
one man's trash is another man's treasure, so you know, that's great. And I was reading too that you wanted to be an architect at one point.
I did. Well, I was one of those, you know, when children get into their head from an early age that there's something that they want to do, whether it's, you know, a doctor or architect or a fireman or whatever.
Yep.
It was always something that I was going to do, and I was heading towards it, actually. Yep. And I did work experience with some architects, and I swiftly changed my mind because I think it must have been about 15 or something like that.
Yep.
I realized that the way my mind works, I wouldn't be able to compromise creatively.
Yep.
So if I had a client sort of wanted to do something that I didn't want to do, I'd find it very, very difficult. Be like an artist. If you're an artist and you did a beautiful painting and someone said, "Oh, Tad, I love that. Could you do it in pink instead?" It's like, well, no, it is what it is. So
absolutely.
I would have had real difficulty, I think. But I'm glad I realized early.
But that's pretty amazing that at the age of 15 that you were able to actually realize that.
It didn't mean that I knew what I was going to do though.
That's right, but you knew what you didn't want to do, and that's one step in the right direction.
Well, to be honest with you, even when I was working in an office environment, I realized that wasn't for me. That was a part of it too. You know, like, okay, it's such and such a time, we have lunch now, and such a time to do this. Being in air conditioning all day, I was sort of like, no, this isn't where I feel I should be.
No, but you certainly didn't choose something easier, that's for sure.
Absolutely not.
Because it's, you know, the food industry is a tough gig.
It is a tough gig, but I must say I like working with people.
Yeah.
That's been a really good thing for me.
I agree with that completely. I think it's great to work with people that are wanting or have the desire to work in a gig that's tough, that they know it's tough. They know that that's what they're signed up for.
Yeah. And you never know, as you're well aware, you never know what's happened to people before they arrive on your doorstep. And I was quite like trying to, you know, let them leave with a positive experience.
Definitely.
And that's part of the challenge, I think, is make everyone happy.
Yeah, well, that's a good way to put it, because it's, like you say, there's a lot of different personalities in it, and, you know, a lot of people are in hospitality for different reasons. Mm-hmm. Some people want to do it for the career and the purpose that they see in it. Other people kind of view it sometimes as an in-between thing, mm-hmm. you know, a way to earn money in between what they norm or what they're searching for.
Yeah. And that's okay.
It is okay. Definitely. As long as
I've got staff there that are full-time hospitality staff that live and breathe it.
Yeah.
And I've got people there that work like maybe one shift or two shifts because they're studying to do something else.
Yeah.
But they give it their all while they're there.
Yeah.
And that's the main thing. If they're there for like 6 hours or 60 hours.
Hopefully not 60 hours. Yeah. That's right. And, tell us about the cafes that you've got. You've got, two of them, is that right?
That's right.
At the moment? Yeah.
Um, So I opened south of Johnston about, I think we're in our fifth year now.
It was actually on, if my research is correct, mm-hmm. on Friday the 13th,
yes.
April 2012.
Yeah, that? That's yeah, right.
Okay.
That's
was that
right.
intentional? On
no, Friday? No. Okay. I had a pretty bad experience with the first builder
yeah.
with the cafe. And so everything was delayed and there's a few issues with, you know, trying to get a new builder on board to yep. finish it off and stuff. And I met an incredible man called Paul Macris who helped me get the whole thing done and yep. complete. So everything was delayed a bit and it just had to open when it opened,
right.
to be honest with you. And I had to sort of got, you know, into March and I had to sort of set a date. And I just yep. thought, well, I probably need another, like, you know, 2 weeks. That's like, you know, it's going to be Friday. And I thought, you know what? Who cares? It's Friday right. the 13th. It could be a good omen.
That's right. Well, a lot of people do view it as a good luck.
Yeah.
Fine, you know.
And so that opened then. And then last year, we opened a place called Oxford Larder, which is actually yep. in the same street, but it's more of a little sort of provador cafe down the road okay. that sells cookware and yep. cookbooks
okay.
and takeaway food, and it's lots of FODMAP stuff, yep. so lots of gluten-free sort of things, yep. and it's just a little sort of cute French-style hole-in-the-wall kind yep. of number.
And your book would obviously be in there?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, good. So people can know, they can check it out. That's great. And, you know, it's interesting. I just came back, well, not just, it feels like it's been just, but I was in New York for a few weeks over Christmas time. And
that's good that you still feel like you've just got back.
Yeah, well, just, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, time evades me. So, but it was interesting how places outside of Melbourne now, like, you know, when I moved to Melbourne 20 years ago, the mm-hmm. food scene was just not what it is now at mm-hmm. all. You know, whether you're talking about cafes or the fine dining side of it. And to me, it always seemed that everybody looked for inspiration from outside
mm-hmm.
to do what they were doing. And now it's very much different. Everyone's looking into...
To Melbourne.
To Melbourne.
And, yeah, Melbourne's kind of hot right
now. It is. And even in New York, a lot of... you know, there have been a few cafes here that exported their
Do you know
vision.
How many Americans, Tad, come into the cafe and say, if only you'd open in Atlanta.
I know. But seriously, because first there's no good coffee there. And I'm American. So, yeah. you know, there's very rare that you get a decent cup of coffee in the United States. And
but
not
they
everywhere.
They do big coffees.
They do big coffee. Yeah, that's right.
They do big and bigger
exactly.
and bigger.
Exactly. But so when I was back there, it was just very obvious that mm-hmm. there was a lot of, you know, Melbourne, Australian influence there. I yep. mean, even in, I went to the Chelsea Food Market one day and there was an Australian tuck shop where they sold Australian pies.
Australians in hospitality in New York and LA at yep. the moment are doing really, really well. They're very respected on the world scale. Yep. And the way that they're doing their produce, their bacon, for instance, is quite yeah. different from American bacon.
Yes.
They're importing things. They know the value of free-range egg and the flavors in that.
Yep.
And the way they're sort of constructing things and getting, you know, their beans roasted and stuff like that
yeah.
is really taking off.
It's interesting. And from your perspective as a cafe owner and, mm-hmm. and being part of that inspiration and innovation on the way things are done, what do you think has fueled the evolution, or maybe it's a revolution, in that food side of things that has made it such a unique thing?
I don't know. We might be coming out of hopefully a bit of a phase of mass consumption, like
yep.
maybe we've got, I think, you know, like I don't want to keep talking about American food in negative terms, but when I have been there before, I've found it very formulaic
yeah.
and flavorless.
Yeah.
So it sort of reminds me of, like, say, the equivalent of a big hotel buffet sort of thing.
Right.
So maybe...
Again, quantity over quality.
Yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah, and just sort of a bit bland
yep.
and lots of sauces and lots
yeah.
of salts and things like that. Whereas, you know, maybe the way we go about making food and preparing food is a bit more of a celebration of the ingredients.
Yep.
Rather than, you know, it being overly manufactured or easy to make
yeah.
Or unpackage.
Right. And I think too, it's I guess too, because Australia is a much younger country than, say, the United States, we haven't had the same amount of time to evolve from norms, whether it was, you know, British influence or had the opportunity to take advantage of the immigration, you know, from whether it's from Asia or or Europe or wherever that is. I mean, obviously our coffee is a direct result of Italian immigration back in the 50s. We've talked about that on the show with other people along, you know, many times. But it just seems it's embraced so much more, and people just celebrate it that much, you know, and it becomes a demanding thing almost where, like, for example, when Starbucks came in, you know, they obviously did not do their research all that well because they didn't understand the demographic and the fact that people like to go to a cafe and have a coffee made for them fresh. And I think that makes a big difference too. There's more of a discerning, I guess, palate in that, which is continuing to develop, I think.
I think that's the catalyst too, is that, like, people will sort of hear about something, want to get involved in something and try it and then decide whether it's for them or not. Yeah. So people that might have normally had a cafe from a coffee from a big, you know, generic coffee store or something might go, oh, maybe I'll try one of these lattes. And if they have it and they hold it and covet it and love it, then they're going to get a taste for it because it is a premium product, really, when it's made
correctly. Absolutely. And I think people appreciate that a lot more, which is important, I think. And again, you know, it allows you to do amazing things in your shop and try new things. And I want to talk a bit more about innovation as well and how you view that in a minute.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Welcome back to Cravings. I'm Tad Lombardo, and in the studio today is with me Stuart McKenzie, who's just put out a beautiful book called All Day Cafe and is owner of a couple of cafes over in Collingwood, and we were talking about innovation as well during the break. And how do you innovate? I was asked to speak this week at a dinner about for young leader emerging leaders, and they're at Monash University doing a course in the food industry, and the concept, the topic was innovation, and I never really thought about that before. And it was interesting to hear people in industry what their opinions of that are. And obviously running the cafe and you know, menus changing all the time, you've got your staple things on the menu, but you also are constantly innovating and changing things as the seasons change and as new products become available. I guess that happens all the time, and it's almost an organic process. How do you deal with that, or how do you innovate when it comes to that in the cafe?
It's probably a bit different for us with our style of businesses, because we're just open during the day. Yeah. We don't open at night. And a lot of people, I think, are a bit more experimental with a dinner menu. You probably know that with your background with Attica, that you can explore more with a degustation or whatever. So in particular with South of Johnson and Oxford Larder, you know, both of them, a lot of people come in for breakfast, and things might sound fantastic that the chefs have come up with specials, you know, that have, you know, they've bought in things specifically and prepared them. People think, oh, that sounds fantastic, but I just want scrambled eggs on toast and a flat one.
Right.
You know, so
they want the standard.
Yeah. And it's a little bit different for us. So, but we do constantly look at what's new. There's more gluten-free things that have definitely crept in. And we're very aware of people's allergies and dietary constraints and things like that. So our innovation is more trying to find the best products we can on the market to make sure that people that have those kind of requirements still have something good to eat in front of them. Yeah. And we also look towards where we're very big on the provenance, shall we say, of the food. So where things come from. So if we're going to use bacon, it has to be free range. It has to be from a good, reputable supplier. Our sort of theory is, if you're not going to be vegetarian, then we have to make sure that we still treat the animals or anything along the way with respect. So that's really where our innovation comes from. We're constantly looking at better things to serve, better ways of serving. But then having said that, you know, like all of a sudden there'll be something on the menu Monday to Friday lunchtime, for instance, we have a bit of a business trade and people will be a bit more experimental with that. So we might all of a sudden have, you know, swordfish steaks or something that we don't normally have, but it's more produce driven rather than, You know how there's always buzzwords with food, like salted caramel was big.
Absolutely.
And,
yeah. It still is big.
It's still, yeah, you know
it's
why.
It's a trend it's that hasn't stopped. Exactly.
It's yeah. so delicious. Yep. But quinoa, all those kind of things come and go. And, you know, with what we do, we try to keep some classics.
Yep.
Maybe give them a little bit of a twist,
yeah,
and then try to come up with some other flavors that go nicely together too, just to keep things guessing. So there's things on our menu that you'll see that have been there since day one, that there would honestly be a lynch mob if we tried to take them off.
Oh, I know what that's like. Yeah.
Where is it?
Yeah.
And then there's other things that come and go because we've got to kind of keep it fresh and seasonal.
Yeah, because you do have those people that want that same thing all the time, and then you've got other people that want to try something different every time they come in.
And I'm a little bit guilty of that. I mean, it's funny because, you know, like there's so many cafes in the area in Collingwood where we are, and I live in the same area, and I go to different places all the time, but because I live in the area, like I'll walk past somewhere nearby and I'll see, you know, some of my customers sitting there and they sort of duck their head and look embarrassed.
Really?
Like, hey, we've all got to support each other. I go to different places all the time, and I'll go to the same place and have the same thing like once a week, and it's like a little routine and ritual that I have. So they might say, hey, look, we've got beautiful, you know, I don't know, some lamb sort of, you know, that's done with this and this. Like, oh, that sounds great. Can I just get poached eggs, avocado, mushrooms? You know what I mean? Yeah. So everyone has their thing. We just try to make sure that, you know, it's a small business. So you make sure that there's something for everybody that comes in. That's important for us.
Yeah. And that's also probably very difficult as well, trying to please everybody in a way.
Well, it's actually not so hard. I think that it's problematic when you try to do too much.
Right.
In so much as, you know how you sometimes see those restaurants and they've got, you know, Indian style, and then they've got Thai, and then they've got steak, and then they've got something else, and you start sort of thinking, well, it's not that busy. How could they have all that on offer? You know, like, so as long as you sort of know the style. So we're, as I said, very much breakfast and lunch. So there's like a breakfast menu, and then there's like some salads, some pastas, you know. It's just three and three and three kind of thing, you know. So we don't overdo it.
That's good. And also too, I mean, you're also running a business as well, and that has to come into it, you know, also. I mean, there's no point in doing it if you're going to lose money. I mean, that's at the end of the day.
Well, my catalyst for having my own business was always just to be my own boss.
Yeah.
Never had to make a small fortune. I didn't have to be like J.R. Ewing or anything like that.
No.
But I just wanted to make my own decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. And it brings me into some of the other things that you embrace with your business model, the you know, the sustainability, that we talked about, the ethical side of things. But you've made a lot of changes too, structurally, I guess, with your operation to make sure that you're, you know, doing the best you can to reduce waste, you know, take advantage of solar power, those sorts of things. And that was obviously a conscious decision you made. And was that after you opened up the cafe, or was that part of the...
Well, when we had the cafe in Middle Park, we were very, very fortunate because it was in an old train station, and we approached Vic Rail at the time, and spoke to a fantastic person that said, oh yeah, that's a great idea, have it. So we opened the cafe there and did the fit out and all that sort of stuff, but we were really lucky because the electricity that we needed to run the cafe couldn't be delineated from their electricity, so we never had to pay it.
Oh, good.
Amazing, huh? Amazing.
Perfect. It's a win-win.
So it was a rude shock when I opened south of Johnston how much utilities is. And so when we started kind of getting these massive gas and electricity bills, I thought, we're not excessive. As I said, we're not even open at night.
No.
I was like, God, how do people survive? Yep. How do you do it? There's so many bills behind the scenes, as you'd know, with hospitality. And so that was part of the reason.
Yeah.
The other part was South of Johnston's in an old warehouse, and these buildings were never really made to be, you know,
serving
a cafe
food
or a restaurant or anything, or, you know, even a house, you know, people that live in warehouses. Oh, looks really pretty in photos, but wait till the middle of summer and everything's melting. But we insulated it and everything, of course, at South of Johnston. But I just, when we had our first summer there, I didn't have any, like, cooling or anything like that. I thought, we're just going to wing it, see how we go. All of a sudden, it's sort of heating up and up and up. And I bought these fans off eBay, which was the worst decision ever. They were the size of like a small car.
Yeah.
And I bought two of them and put them at either end of the cafe and sort of turned them on one day and it
blew
was,
people away.
It was like, well, chill out, you know,
yeah.
the Wizard of Oz. Yeah. It was Emerald City. Everything started blowing and people's garnishes were falling off their food and I was and it also sounded like Armageddon.
Right, yeah.
So I turned them off and then thought, we've got to do something about this next year. So the whole thing, sorry, to wrap it up.
No, it's
all right. I thought the only way I feel in today's kind of economic climate, I can feel justified by putting in split systems, yep. which we did.
Mm-hmm.
We put in four quite big ones, was to offset that with putting in solar panels. So we put in 40, got some, you know, got a loan, got it on... a little bit of a rebate as well.
Yep.
And I'm very lucky because we've got a beautiful long flat roof to put them on and the owner of the building thought it was a great idea.
Yeah.
So we put 40 panels up and that's really helped out with the costs of the electricity. But mainly I just feel like on a hot day I can put on the cooling or the heating in winter and feel that I'm not just sucking things out of the... the planet.
That's good. And I guess there's also the opportunity of on the days you're not using it goes back into the grid as well. Is that that's part
well,
of
well we're open every day so
right.
maybe
okay, so
maybe for
using...
that like 10 days over Christmas when we close we might get a couple of bucks back.
Okay.
You never really know whether you get anything back though, do you?
I know, although I did read recently that the amount that you will potentially can get back is mm-hmm. going to dramatically increase apparently for Victorians, but like you say, when you're using it, it's
well, it works really well for us because we're not, we're just daytime.
Yes.
So we maximize all the power during the daylight.
Yeah.
And we don't have a battery
to
store it.
Yeah.
Because we don't really need to. I mean, it would be handy, but we don't really need it.
Yeah. Well, that's great. It's really a good way to.
I've almost paid them off too.
That's great.
I know. I think I've got another 4 months or something like
that. Do you know how much power is generated from the solar versus what you're taking
off
the grid?
We've got 10,000 kilowatt or something capacity. And we usually, like, you know, the funny thing with solar is I think everyone like me that didn't know a lot about it beforehand thinks that it has to be a burning hot sunny day for it to work, but it doesn't. So even on an overcast grey day, we might, you know, generate 5,000 or 6,000 kilowatts.
Right, and still enough light coming through.
Yeah. So about 60% of our electricity bill is paid for by the solar.
That's great.
Which is great.
Yeah.
And we're usually generally sort of on about 8,000 a day.
Right.
As far as what we're generating.
That's great. And with that whole concept, is there anything else that you'd like to do to even make it more...
Oh, there's so many things you want to do. But
obviously, costs come into that.
Yeah,
it's not
that's
cheap.
That's actually the thing. You know, that's the thing about having a small business is every time you sort of think you've got a little bit of money, you can do something with it. All of a sudden, the bill comes and you go, "Oh my God, what's that
that's
for?
<right. laughs>
How'd that happen?" Or like, you know, I had a major plumbing issue
right.
a couple of years, about 18 months ago now, and that just sucked everything dry again.
Right. Yeah.
But you know, there's always things you want to do. You know, like I'd like to do. We're pretty good with our recycling. We're great with, like, one of the chefs there, his father's got, like, a chicken farm kind of thing. So heaps of stuff go back to that.
Oh, good.
And also, too, I don't own the building. I'm just,
you
know, a tenant. So
there's limits.
A bit limit with that sort of thing, too. But I'm always sort of thinking of, well, we try to make sure our chemicals that we use are sort of going to be good for the...
Yep.
For the earth. And the toilet paper that we use is the one that gives... 50 cents or something every dollar to find clean water over in Africa. There's all those sort of little things without sounding too goody-goody.
No, just, but they all add up. And, you know, I think those are decisions that collectively, if everybody can make, makes a big difference.
With the Who Gives a Crap brand of toilet paper, it's actually more cost-effective to buy that than the toilet paper I was buying.
Right.
And yet the ethics behind that brand are... quite amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to talk some more in a few minutes, but you're listening to Cravings on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLD TIQ Community Radio Station Joy 94.9.
Right, we're back with Stuart McKenzie talking about, again, his new incredible cookbook, All Day Cafe, and his cafes that he runs and his larder business as well. We were just talking about what your secret food shame is.
So you really are going to ask me that?
I am. Yeah.
Well, you know, here we are talking about all lovely organic things and beautiful home-cooked things and ethically sourced and stuff like that. But you know what? My secret food shame, one of my favorite things is like generic white bread sandwich slices.
Really?
Kraft singles that come wrapped in the plastic.
No, plastic cheese.
Yeah. I put one of the, well, actually make them in bulk, but just if you were going to make it at home, one piece of sliced white bread, one piece of the cheese out of the wrapper, and you put it in the microwave for 30 seconds, and then you fold it over, and it's called a hot cheese roll.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
you
so bad.
You don't do those
bad.
At the cafe, though.
No, we don't make them at the cafe. It goes really, the bread goes soggy and the cheese goes soggy. It's terribly hideous.
Right.
But it's my...
But it makes you feel good.
It That's... really does. I think it was from my having no money days, you know, when I was younger.
Yeah, well, there's nothing wrong with that, you know.
Hey, it's history.
That's
nothing
right.
you can do about it.
No, exactly right. So what's next for you? What are your plans for future? And, you know, obviously you said there's a few extra recipes that weren't used in this book. Does that mean there's going to be another one at some point?
I don't know. I guess, you know, I'm always surprised. Like I spoke to Corinne the other day and she said that like it was selling really well. And I kind of get like, is it? You know, she's like, yeah, you sound surprised. I'm like, I don't know. Everything these days is sort of a surprise. You never know what's going to come along. If I was given the opportunity again, I would.
Yeah.
Am I yearning to do it at the moment? I feel like having a bit of a breather for a while, actually. Part of me's always wanted to open a cafe up in the country.
Yeah, yeah.
So who knows what life holds in store.
Put it out there.
Yeah. Just
that's
see.
Good.
We've had a really busy couple of years, personally.
Yeah.
Which is good. Yep. Busy is good. But I think, you know, 2017 and it's what tiring. The hell, let's take 2018 off as well.
Yeah.
And just work and just chill.
Yep. Yeah. I think that's good sometimes. You know, it's all good. It's great to have goals and things like that, but you know, and if it's your pursuit of happiness or whatever it is, but I think it's sometimes it's okay to kind of just put that on hold and just be happy with what you're doing. You know?
Sometimes you'll sort of catch yourself. You'll be sitting at like, you know, lunch on a Sunday or something with a couple of friends and you just go, God, I'm missing you guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, I want to make sure that I make sort of a bit more time to catch up with people, you know, one-on-one and
the important
see
things.
How they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's important to do that every now and again and to make it a part of your routine as well. I think that's the other thing. You know, just realizing that, you know, you go all the time and like you say, that's great. But it's also okay to not go all the time, you know.
Well, part of that, I guess, is like Simon, my partner, is a teacher. So he
works
Monday to Friday.
Yeah.
And I prefer to work, say, Wednesday to Sunday.
Yeah.
But that's no good, is it? Like, you know, you can't sort of work 7 days a week with it, you know, without seeing each other for a full day.
Yeah.
So we're going to take... I'm going to take Sundays off.
Ooh.
I know. Big decision.
That's good, though. Yeah.
I've got a great team. I've got a fantastic team there. So I'm going to work Tuesday. So hopefully
Why
it works.
Not?
Simon and I might find that we don't enjoy having our Sundays together, but I think we will.
Oh, I think you will. Yeah,
we've done it before.
Good. I think it's important to do that. And I think, too, like you say, you've got a great team. You know, you've made the sacrifices to create that and to have that. Use it.
And Tad, they like it when I'm not there. Like, they like it when I am there.
Wait a minute.
Hold on. What am I trying to say? No, they like it when I'm there, but they also like the autonomy. I mean, they're professionals. So they, you know, I still sort of walk in and go, who put that there?
Yeah.
But, you know, they like having the space to themselves occasionally and playing host themselves. I mean, they enjoy their industry, so...
And I think it's important to empower the people that you've put in that role. What's the point of having them in that role? You might as well
do
it yourself.
I always do. Yeah. And sometimes, you know, like I walk around saying the same thing and I'll say, I'm going to continue to say it until it's absorbed. That's what I do.
Well, I mean, it's your business, your rules. And if you want the flowers there, that's where you'll put the flowers.
And there's always a reason. Like, you know, I don't just do things just
to
trip out.
No, definitely not.
There's always a rationale because I'm nearly 50. I've been doing it for 30 years. So, and you're the same, you know, like you've been doing it long enough to know without being,
seriously.
You can always learn things, but
absolutely.
There's a way.
I always say, you know, because I mean, I mostly work by myself, but sometimes I bring people help to help me with certain projects that come up. And I am more than happy to listen to somebody show me something that is going to make my life 300% easier if I've been doing something the same way for that long a time. And but I mean, I've already experimented. I know what works and what doesn't work.
I think some of my friends need to talk to you because the one thing that comes up with some of my friends when they're trying to make things is none of them can is it called tempering chocolate?
Tempering chocolate.
It's like the one thing. It's like the holy grail of dessert making. They just can't seem to do it.
I'm going to come and visit you. Okay. We'll do a little workshop. How's that?
All right.
Seriously.
All right. Okay.
We'll organize that. It's not as hard. It does take practice, but there's some easy ways to do that.
None of them. I've never tried. None of them seems to be able to nail it.
Okay.
They need a bit of tad guidance.
Yeah, definitely. But it's that sort of thing where, you know, again, with my engineering background, I know
the science certain things. Of it, yeah?
The chemistry. So somebody comes in and I see they're not doing it that way. And I'm like, well, no, I'd actually prefer you to do it this way because I know it's not going to work out and you're going to make me lose product that way.
Yeah.
You know, and that's going to cost me money in the long run.
Yeah.
You know, so those sorts of things I will step in. But, I guess it's like you say, it's important to, empower the people that you've entrusted to run your business, that if they've got certain skills or things like that to allow them to run with it, but they also have to run it past you first, you know.
Oh, I just say to them, look, if nothing else, just be friendly.
Yeah.
All starts with being friendly. Anything, you can get away with more if you're friendly. If you start getting snappy, then you've lost the case already.
Yeah, absolutely. And we all know how sometimes it can be difficult dealing with the public, and we all have good days and bad days.
Some people are better under pressure than others.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess it's just putting those people in the right roles that would have to deal with that. I guess that's the side of it. And it's those are the trials and tribulations of hospitality, isn't it?
It's finding those people is, you know, it's so rewarding when you do. Like, you know, there are some, Melbourne or Australia in general has never had a strong hospitality career focus.
Right.
You know, and people that are more inclined to work in those fields probably do work at places like Attica and Cutler & Co. and things. So I'm really lucky. I've got some fantastic professionals and we're just like a little cafe.
But that's great, too. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And with your larder, the that's not too far from your cafe, is that right?
Yeah, it's only about 100 metres.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's good. And what was the inspiration behind wanting to sell that? Just to share some of the ingredients that you're using or the, you know, that side of it and to just have a place that you can...
The reason really why for me was there's lots of businesses in the area. Monday to Friday, there's lots of takeaway sort of outlets and things. We wanted to offer some really fresh takeaway stuff for lunch. So lots of the items there are made in the kitchens at South of Johnson and taken down there.
Yep.
So they always have like three salads a day and a soup and all these things that are sort of quite... hearty and healthy sort of options. And it's only small, but you can eat there if you want. A lot of people do.
Oh, okay.
But the idea was that people that sort of worked in the area, if they, you know, so many people, Tad, seem to work from the office, have lunch in their office.
Right.
Like they don't go out for lunch anymore. That whole hour lunch sort of break thing doesn't seem to happen that much.
Yeah.
So many people I speak to are like, I'm not having a break today. I'm going to go early or whatever. Yep. So the whole idea was that they could run down, get something for like $10-$12.
Right.
It's a complete meal.
Yep.
It's got lots of fresh ingredients and vegetables and, you know, a bit of protein if they want. And they can sit at a desk still and, you know, have something that's not a sandwich. Or, you know, like a pie.
The usual. Yeah.
Or a soggy cheese.
A plastic cheese
sandwich. Oh, no,
I might, when I come and do that tempering, I might have you make me one of those.
Oh, really? Okay, maybe.
We can
it's
share
a date.
One. Okay, cool.
Chocolate and cheese.
That's right. Hey, it does work.
Yeah.
That's great. And I think it's, like you say, you know, a lot of times people don't have time to go and grab something that's healthy or you know, that option.
I think it's also like expensive to go and grab things for one, you know, even two. But, you know, by the time like we sort of try to keep the price points at around that mark.
Yep.
But by the time you go to a supermarket and go and buy your ingredients to make that, you're usually kind of like worse off.
That's right. Definitely. One of the things I wanted to ask you as well is, again, being in the food world and, you're putting a lot of yourself out there, you know, whenever you create a new dish, you're putting something out there, and you're open to people's criticisms on that.
Yeah,
they might like it, they might not. How do you deal with that? You know, like in this day and age of, you know, everybody's got their iPhone, everyone seems to be a food critic these days. How do you get your head around that? And you know, do you listen to them? Do you not? Do you, you know,
it kind of gets always around. Listen.
Yeah.
Always listen. I mean, it's always, I find it kind of interesting, the phenomenon with social media and images and stuff like that. I think Shows like MasterChef and My Kitchen Rules, for all their sensationality, it's making people think about what they're eating.
Yep.
You know, after, you know, say a decade or two of, you know, I mean, when I was young, I think everything was pretty much organic, you know, just by default.
Just by default, yeah.
But, you know, sort of coming out of the 2000s or whatever, everyone's thinking about preparing food, cooking food, and flavors that go together, and things that do and don't work. I'm very lucky. My head chef, Matthew, is incredibly talented with his palate.
Right.
And then there's occasionally things that maybe some of the other staff, because we always encourage staff to put things forward.
Right.
You know, that work in the kitchen, like, you know, we don't want them to just be, you know, pods.
Yeah, that's right.
And some things I think are more successful than others, the combination of flavors and things. But I will usually try to get to it before it hits the tables.
Right.
You know, if I think it, I'll say, I think that's really great, but it needs some sort of grain with it.
Right. Yep.
Or I would think it needs like double that herbage.
Yep.
Put more parsley, blah, 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 blah. Or would it be really good with a good handful of Parmigiano over the top. So we always try to play with our flavors.
Right.
But to be honest with you, if somebody doesn't like something, then they should be able to send it back and get something that they do like.
Yep.
You know, like
as long as it's justified, I'd say.
That's pretty much what we do. Like, I mean, you know, we have had people that sort of have ordered something and haven't read it properly and didn't realize that it's got prosciutto in it, and they kind of, and it's like, that's okay.
Yeah.
All right, we'll get you something. We'll do the same thing without it. You know, we try not to make a big song and dance about that kind
of
stuff.
That's good customer service.
Yeah. And, you know, like, I want people to walk away going, I that was resolved.
Yep. That's right.
In a way that I'm happy with, and I really enjoyed what I ended up with. But we don't get too many people. Well, I mean, I'm not just saying, we don't get too many people sending things back.
Yep. Okay. We're going to hear a little bit more from you and in just a minute. Again, it's 24 degrees, and this is Cravings on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ Community Radio Station, Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Cravings. My name is Tad, and in the studio with me is Stuart McKenzie. And, we just have a great old chat this afternoon about your new book and your businesses that you've got, your cafes, and I think we've gotten a great insight as to what makes you tick.
Thanks.
I'll look forward to coming over at some stage and checking it all out and teaching your guys how to temper
chocolate.
Don't
go in there tomorrow to visit me, because I'll be at Chill Out.
Oh, no, don't worry.
I'm going to take off. But we're open. But
yeah, I work on Sundays as well. So
at the market?
Yes.
Of course.
Yeah. So, that's a market day. So it's no rest for the wicked, as they say, or weary.
When's your day off? What day off do you
have? Mondays.
Yeah.
Generally Mondays.
I have Mondays off too. Yeah, it's quite quiet. Like it.
Yeah, it is. It's good. Everyone else is at work, and it's
and
quite nice.
The rest of the world's at work, so you sort of got the city to yourself.
You do, yeah. It's something good, but, you know, like, you tend to just make all your appointments and things that you don't get to do during the rest of the week.
Yeah.
That's what you end up doing on that day. But
that's right.
Yeah. But I wish you all the best of luck with your book.
Thank you.
And like I said, I absolutely loved it. I've had a good look at it, and it's just, you know, I think from a cookbook point of view, it's one of the best I've seen. And I think it's something that cookbooks never go out of style. Everybody loves a cookbook to have on their shelf and or on their coffee table. And this is a perfect one for that.
I really appreciate that.
No, thank you so much for coming in today. It's been it's great to meet you and get to know you, and we'll definitely keep in touch, and look forward to what's next for you. Is there anything else that you want to add to what we've talked about?
No, I've just had a lovely afternoon, and it's been nice to meet you too.
Oh, thank you very much. And next week, Cravings is taking a day off. And we will not be on air, but there'll be a live broadcast on Joy 94.9. But coming up next, we've got the Escape Pod. And Joy is going to be next week, and we're just taking the day off, which is great. So it's nice when that happens, and it doesn't happen very often. It's nice to be able to enjoy a Saturday when you have something to, you know, not expect what you're doing, and to just take it as it comes. So it's all a bit of fun. Thank you again for coming to the studio today. I know it's a busy day for you to pull you away from the cafe, and
it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, all the best with the new book, and I look forward to the next one. You've got all those recipes that you still have hanging around, so it's all good. But I'm going to be handing out over to the Escape Pod, and have a great weekend, and we'll see you the week after next.
Thanks for listening to another Cravings podcast with Pete Dillon, online at joy.org.au/cravings and live Saturdays from 1 p.m. on Joy 94.9 in Melbourne. Exploring all that's finest in food and beverage across Melbourne and Victoria. Sponsored by La Spaghettata. Over 35 years of food, family and fun at 238 Lygon Street, Carlton. Wine and dine with La Spaghettata for an authentic Italian experience. Pasta, wine, seafood, steak and so much more. Dine in and enjoy the authentic sights and sounds of Lygon Street. Or order takeaway now via Deliveroo, Uber Eats or Foodora. Eat, drink, love with La Spaghettata. Call 9663 6102. Visit laspaghettata.com.au or find them on Facebook.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.